This is the Outlap F1 Podcast featuring America's own Cody, Andy, and Deanna. Your one-stop shop for Formula One news, insights, race previews, and reviews. Join us on the Outlap. What's up, Outlap F1 Nation? This is season 6. This is episode number 7 of the Outlap F1 podcast. We are going down under, baby. It's the 2024 Australian GP race preview show. You've got Andy, and I'm along with my usual preview co-host, Cody. It is good to see you again, sir. Long time no see. we basically hung out pretty much the entirety of the weekend. And when we say that, we literally mean 45 of, I think, almost the 48 hours or something pretty close to that.
Yeah, I had a nice, very late night of poker with friends, which was fantastic. And I just like to brag that I, you know, cleaned house at the end there, made a nice comeback. And then, yeah, some good time together on Sunday, too.
Yeah, good hangover recovery day on Sunday. I think that's pretty much where we all were, but that's what we do in Chicago on St. Patrick's Day weekend. We revel it up just a little bit. And after the week I had before, I didn't have a problem being hungover on Sunday. So that's all right. It's all good. We are going to focus our attention on the Australian GP weekend. But before we do, we just want to give you guys a reminder. You can find the show, as always, Twitter, Instagram, Discord, Reddit, and, of course, YouTube is where you can find us. At Outlap F1 Podcast is the handle. Do us a solid. You can always see our link tree in our show notes. Do us a solid. If you like what you're seeing and you enjoy what you're hearing, click the like and subscribe button on YouTube or the 5-star button on your favorite podcasting app. Just as a general reminder to use our new Apple Podcast thread. That's where all the latest and new episodes will go. We put it out on all our social media. It's on our link tree. Link tree will take you directly to the new one. So you just follow the show like you did before and you're all set. You'll automatically get every time we submit anything there. Email the show, chat now at outlapf1.com. Still working on the website. Eventually that will come back. www.outlapf1.com will take you there. Just as a general reminder, thank you so much to everybody in the Outlap F1 Nation for continuing to step up. Thank you so much to our continued monetary supporters, Dean Warwick, Yuri Dolchester, Paul Weaver, Quinton Warden, Kevin Kelly, Regan Stanzik, Timothy Brown, and of course, Jonathan Scott. If you'd like to become a member of the Outlap F1 Nation, you can see our link in our show notes, $5. All goes into making the show better, investing in new equipment, upgrading the equipment we already have. To try to make the show better and more better product for you. So you can see our link in our show notes for that. And just as a general reminder, the good folks at Manscaped, our code OUTLAP, OUTLAP, will continue to work, and you'll get 20% off and free shipping if you put in that code at checkout. All right. So before we hop into the fun of the Australian GP weekend, we do have some news items that we kind of have to talk about. It's continued to be a drama-filled off-track season, if nothing else. Oh, my Lord. So we'll start with the Christian Horner saga, which continues to play out. Doesn't seem like we've got any way, sense, or form of this ever wrapping up, at least not in the near term. So here's what we know, and that's always the key thing here. It's what we know versus what we don't. We know that the accuser had been suspended by the Red Bull GmbH organization. She has decided then to appeal her case, as was her right. When Red Bull issued their finding, they said the accuser could appeal. She's now done so. She's also appealed, which is kind of interesting, to the FIA Ethics Committee. So they're going to have to take up an investigation to see what, if anything, can come out of that. We've had the issue with Helmut Marko suggesting to the media that he might get suspended for the Australian GP for talking to the media. So that's kind of an interesting, ironic twist of fate there. But he then met with shareholders and officials, and apparently he's kind of been given the all clear. The question that I have is, was he potentially the initial leaker? Because it had to be someone who had F1 media contacts, F1 team principal contacts, and all that stuff. So it would have had to have been somebody on the inside. The arrows seem to be pointing that perhaps Helmut Marko, in this power struggle drama that continues to happen at the Red Bull organization, may have been the one to send the supposed email. And then Max Verstappen chimed in and said that if Helmut Marko is kicked out or forced to retire, that he may be forced to leave Red Bull, which could also trigger one Adrian Newey leaving the Red Bull organization as well. So the thought is that if Christian Horner somehow manages to survive this, he may end up losing his prized pupil and his prized aerodynamicist, the aero god that is Adrian Newey. What a mess. Cody, what's your take on all of this? I know you're a big Red Bull guy, but oh my gosh, what drama.
It is definitely a bit of a shit show. It seems so crazy to me how Red Bull is so successful and so dominant right now, and yet everything behind the scenes of the organization indicates that they are falling apart at the seams. You've got just about every, you know, well talked about high profile member of Red Bull. You know, almost everyone has been rumored to be possibly leaving or possibly getting fired or suspended. You know, Christian Horner is the only one that, you know, really makes direct sense. But, you know, we've heard Helmut Marko might be getting suspended or fired. Adrian Newey might leave. Max Verstappen might leave if Helmut Marko leaves. And, you know, all this craziness with personnel. And yet, you know, the only person who has actually been suspended or anything thus far is the person who made the accusation, which is very unfortunate, in my opinion. It's crazy. I hope that they're able to put it back together, because they've got such a good thing going right now. And, you know, Red Bull has been so wildly successful over, you know, pretty much the entire time that I've been a fan of Formula One. And yeah, I would hate for this. I mean, for Christian Horner, particularly, you know, we've said this time and time again, if he is in fact guilty of the things he is accused of, he should rightfully be out the door. But it just feels wrong that something off the track would be the downfall of Red Bull.
Yeah, and my biggest concern was kind of, were they using this woman, you know, the accuser, as kind of the catalyst to play out this big melodrama off the track? It seems like if they are, they have her support, because she's the one then bringing this additional actions, you know, to the forefront here. Interesting that she filed something with the FIA. So, you know, again, it's going to go to their ethics committee. They will take up an investigation, and they'll decide either no further action at that point, or they'll try to bring something, you know, additional if they feel it's warranted. Because this happens kind of in the FIA's jurisdiction, I guess that's kind of the angle there. You know, I'm kind of glad that she's appealing to at least the Red Bull organization, because, you know, again, I don't know what was, we're never going to know probably what was said behind those closed doors, you know, what evidence was real, what evidence, what isn't. But, you know, as I've said before, if any of what is out there proves to be right, he's fired. Christian Horner's fired. There's just no ifs, ands, or buts to that. That is, it's textbook, especially in the United States. I mean, we have, you know, clear-cut laws that kind of tell you what you can and can't do, and he can't do a lot of what he is being accused of doing. You know, the only question is that real, you know, in my book? So that's what I think still has to kind of play out, and that's what we're going to see. So, yeah, no end in sight to this. Meanwhile, the team on the track continues to just dominate and decimate all, you know, as we've seen in the first two rounds. So now we come to a track that doesn't necessarily always have suited the Red Bull car until last season. So, you know, it could be maybe this one's a little more in doubt than some of the other ones, but with all this melodrama going off the track, you would think at some point it's got to translate somewhere. There's only so many odd and cringeworthy media appearances, you know, people can continue to make before, you know, it's going to take a toll. I, you know, this is the first thing that gets asked about. But anyway, that's what we know. Continue to follow, as always. And then we'll bring you, again, if something does develop that we know and can go with, we'll bring it to you throughout the course of the weekend if anything else breaks. All right. So as if we needed more FIA drama, here's the other side of this. The actual investigation that was launched into the FIA president, Mohammed bin Salayem, has concluded with no further action. So just to kind of refresh your memory, the FIA president was accused by a FIA whistleblower of two main charges. One was influencing or potentially influencing FIA officials over the Alonso 10-second penalty that he was given in Jeddah in 2023, which was later rescinded and his podium was restored. And two, somehow, apparently, maybe in passing or potentially in reality, recommending that the Las Vegas circuit not be homologated, which would have led to the cancellation of that event because it couldn't have been sanctioned by the FIA to run. We all know that the event did run. It did run with some controversy in the beginning, but then it turned out to be a pretty decent race at the end of the day. So we kind of got through it. So apparently no further action. The FIA statement says that they conducted an investigation over 30 days, interviewed 11 different people, and concluded that the accusations of the anonymous whistleblower are unfounded.
Yeah, we kind of talked about this last time too, that it somewhat depends on the context in which he may or may not have been saying these things. I mean, he is the president of the FIA, so anything that he says could have some potential sway, even if it was said in, not in a serious manner or, to the appropriate types of people. But if he just said in passing, which maybe is what they discovered, hey, I don't think this should have happened, or hey, I don't think this penalty was warranted. If he's not saying that in such a way as to sway people, or he's saying it maybe after the fact or something, then maybe that's what happened. We really don't know. We just know that they were found, or he was found to not be in trouble for apparent things that he said, which I guess is a good thing. We can kind of move on from that drama, at least.
Yeah, I mean, it at least appear that this is kind of the end of what the FIA is willing to do. And again, there'll be the cynics out there that always will argue that, the FIA was investigating itself and what else could you have expected of that? But I do think when it comes to the FIA Ethics Committee, they do tend to take this stuff seriously. They did obviously perform an investigation. I have to take that at face value, that at least they did what they said they were going to do. They kept the case open for almost a solid month. It didn't, the story didn't come out until a couple weeks ago, but apparently it had been running in the background for a while. And again, it could just be he's saying something in context in a room with other FIA officials in the room. And, somebody goes, well, he probably shouldn't have said that. Or it could be one of those that, it may have looked in the moment like he was trying to sway, but obviously either did or didn't. So, I mean, like I said, I'm going to take it at face value. I hope that that is really what happened, or more appropriately, that something didn't happen, because if it did, it's a much, much larger issue. And then you could just see the strings unraveling, and then Lord only knows where we're going to be.
If he did, actually try to sway people and then was found to not be guilty, who knows? Maybe he'd take that opportunity to be like, oh, I can get away from this from now on. But I do tend to agree with you that, we can hopefully take it at face value that they did their due diligence and that there was actually no foul play.
Yeah. All right. So one more bit of FIA drama that actually dropped about a couple hours before we actually started recording tonight. I put in the headline, "Don't fuck with Susie Wolf," because that's my takeaway from this, because wow. So cast your mind back to December, right after Abu Dhabi ended, when we were all thinking that we were going to go have the most boring off season in history that has proven to be anything but. And we had the story that came out, I think it was in the Business of F1, of Toto Wolff and Susie Wolff potentially spreading information to one another. Of course, we know Susie Wolff is the leader of the FIA F1 Academy series. And then the FIA Ethics Committee again launched an investigation, at which point Mercedes vehemently denied it. And then all other nine teams also vehemently denied that they put in the request with the same worded statement, all in the span of about the same 45 minutes, which is something I don't think we've ever seen in the history of this sport ever. So cast your mind back to all that. And then, of course, 4 hours after those statements come out, the FIA said, well, our investigation's complete. We found and we're taking no further action. We're backing off. Well, Susie Wolf is not taking that lightly. So this is the statement. I will read it verbatim as to what she said. I believe this is from an Instagram post. But she says, I can confirm that I personally filed a criminal complaint in the French courts on the 4th of March in relation to the statements made about me by the FIA last December. There has still not been any transparency or accountability in relation to the conduct of the FIA and its personnel in this matter. I feel more than ever it is important to stand up, call out improper behavior, and make sure people are held to account. While some may think silence absolves them from responsibility, it does not. Very strong worded statement. Susie Wolf not taking this lightly or sitting down. Here we go again, Cody. What's your thought on this one?
I think she's got a good point, because we never, when that happened, there was all the talk about, like, ooh, what's going on? Like, are the Wolves in trouble for spreading information? Because you could say that there's the potential of conflict of interest with, Toto Wolff being the team principal of an F1 team and Susie Wolf being the leader of the F1 Academy. There's potential for transfer of information there. So it's something that could have happened. But it sounds like this type of accusation was maybe a little rushed, because they closed it out pretty quick. They said they didn't find anything. And as you said, all of the teams really quickly said, no, it wasn't me. We didn't make that accusation. So apparently, I would think what she's talking about with the lack of transparency or accountability is that they don't know who their accusers are, do we? I don't think we do.
No, the only people that I was aware of was the article that was written in the Business of F1, yeah. Which, you know, is kind of known as kind of a ancillary, on the fringe kind of source. That, you know, when they report something, they're usually what I would call a single source reporter. They'll report mm-hmm. what they hear, but I don't know how well they go into fact checking.
Okay. So launching that type of investigation has the potential to cause, you know, some level of defamation to Toto Wolff and Susie Wolff, could bring some defamation to F1 Academy as a whole. And so it's something to be taken pretty seriously. And the fact that we don't know really who decided it was a good idea to launch that investigation, or, you know, who saw some form of evidence in their opinion that warranted this investigation. Maybe there wasn't really any evidence to begin with and they just did it. But yeah, I think she's got a, you know, every right to file this criminal complaint, and hopefully it'll stop the FIA from, you know, jumping the gun on investigations like this in the future, maybe make sure that there is some form of, you know, real evidence before diving in and announcing such a thing.
Yeah. I mean, if it's just based on that article, I still have not seen a byline on that article. And I still haven't seen who they were referencing as the air quote team principals who were all telling each other that they wanted this thing to happen. And then, like I said, the nine statements equally worded in the span of about 45 minutes. Like I said, I've seen a lot of stuff in F1 social media in my life. I have never seen that. And it was just the reaction to it was, well, there's seven of them. Oh, there's eight of them. Oh, there's the set. So, yeah, I mean, and Susie Wolf has the right to defend herself and to go pursue whatever avenues she feels are appropriate. This French court is obviously going to hear a case, as is kind of tradition. It's going to probably be a 2 or 3 month lag time before, you know, between when she files something and when something will even start. If I'm the FIA, I would try to do everything to try to make that, you know, their findings as transparent as possible. Maybe then she would drop the criminal complaint. But yeah, I mean, this is another story that has no seemingly end date in sight. So we will keep watching. We will bring it forward when we know more. And another one. we're going to get to the racing. I swear to God, we're going to actually get to the racing. So Felipe Massa has also lodged a court case, I think in Brazil. I'm not exactly sure which court he's filed it in. But anyway, his contention is that the 2008 championship that he lost by 1 point to Lewis Hamilton should be basically that decision should be reversed. This was fully further buoyed by comments made by former F1 president Bernie Ecclestone, saying that they were aware of the 2000. So, okay, just to kind of set the stage. The 2008 Singapore Grand Prix had what's known as Crashgate. So if you're not familiar with that term, Fernando Alonso was competing for Renault at the time. His team principal was,
I can see his face in my head.
It's driving me crazy. Anyway, he got banned. He got rightfully banned. It's going to hit me later on, and I'm going to find myself really feeling stupid for not remembering that name. But anyway, Fernando Alonso and
Something like that?
Yeah, Flavio. Thank you. Thank you. Flavio Briatore, who I have rallied against many times on this show as well, for being banned, and he was rightly banned for what I'm about to tell you. So he had Fernando Alonso's teammate, Nelson Piquet Jr., deliberately crash his car on a specific lap to cause a safety car, because Fernando Alonso had qualified so bad in that race that the only hope of ever coming to the front was to get a home run safety car on a certain strategy. Well, if you cause that safety car and then he gets his home run strategy and then went on to win the race as he did, that's a problem. And they threw the book at Flavio and they banned him from ever being a team principal ever again. He was banned from the FIA from paddocks for a long time, but now he is also Fernando Alonso's manager. So I guess under Alonso's banner, he's able to be there, at least on the grid at certain times. I've seen him do grid interviews and whatnot, but he can't compete for a team. He can't be an employee of a team or anything like that. Massa's contention is, now that was also the race where you have to go back to 2008. We still had refueling. During one of the pit stops, the gas can or the gas hose got stuck in Massa's car. He tried to peel off to get back onto the track during, I think, that exact same safety car, and took the hose with him, had to stop, went way to the back, ended up retiring, scoring no points. Lewis Hamilton, I think, finished second in that race, so he scored 7 points, and basically, because of that race, was able to, in the last race of that season in Brazil, have the last lap pass. That was the famous Martin Brundle, is that Glock corner. And Hamilton finishes fifth in Brazil and wins the world championship in Brazil, ironically enough, where Felipe Massa was from. So all of that backdrop, now we're multiple years later, Bernie Ecclestone gives an interview basically saying the whole reason that this couldn't have ever been pursued was the FIA rule that says that once the gala happens and the championship is given out, that's kind of the end of any appeals process. Abu Dhabi 2021 fans will know that procedure pretty well, that once we get to that, that's the kind of the end of the ball game. What Massa's contention is that Ecclestone has said in this interview that he knew what they were going to do or what they weren't going to do. And because of that, they could have potentially gone another direction. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. Bernie Ecclestone and Lewis Hamilton have had a long-standing feud. There's a lot of context and back and forth, I think, to all of this. But now it's going to go into a court case. I don't know where it's going to go. I don't know if it'll even get past the initial stages. But what we've had is basically the filing of a lawsuit. So we don't have anything in motion as yet. Nothing's been heard. There's been no motions filed other than, like I said, the preliminary that Felipe Massa intends to pursue this. So to me, it feels like you pretty much ought to let sleeping dogs lie at this point. We're you know, 12 plus years in arrears from when all of this happened. If you're Felipe Massa, he never got close to winning another world championship. This was his best shot. So I kind of get it, at least from his perspective. But Cody, what's your thought on all of this?
I got to imagine that the whole point of this and the way that it's worded is that he wants to appeal the championship decision, right? But I think ultimately that might not be really what he's going for, because I think this far down the line, 15 years down the line, it's way too late to change the decision of the championship, especially since, yes, for that particular race, decisions that were made ended up changing the outcome of that race. You don't know what would have played out after that, though. You know, heck, Massa might have retired anyway and still not scored any points. What we do know is what did happen, and it ended up being that Lewis Hamilton won by 1 point, despite Massa winning that last race. Like, he did everything that he could after that point. What I think he probably wants out of this is some form of compensation, because you have to imagine all of the lost potential for him from that, because while I don't think we can change that Lewis Hamilton is the rightful winner of the championship based on everything that happened, had that race result been nullified because the FIA knew what had happened before the conclusion of the championship, that could have potentially made Felipe Massa championship. And if you look at everything that he could have potentially lost from that, you know, being the champion would have come with all kinds of benefits, bigger pay, bigger, you know, desire by teams to have him drive for them, you know, potentially longer contract with Ferrari. You know, he could have made a lot more money had he been champion, or had a lot more opportunity because of being champion. And I think that's probably ultimately what he's upset about, is that, well, this was a decision that could have cost me the championship, could have cost me all of that extra benefit and money of being champion. And since you knew about it and you didn't say anything, I think you owe me something. I think is ultimately what he is wanting to get out of it. And who knows if he will. I think that, you know, in my opinion, the case might be a little flimsy. He might have something there. I don't think that they'll ever change the results of the championship, though, over it.
Yeah, I mean, that's a stretch. I mean, if you read his lawsuit, what he wants is he wants the result of that race to just be nullified, which would strip Hamilton of 7 points, which would then, you know, change the ultimate result of the 2008 championship. But you can't just take that and put that in a vial in and of itself, because then what happens to the rest of the races? There would have been different strategies in play. There's so many other questions. And to me, I think you're right. I think the ultimate resolution, even if he were to somehow win, is going to be money, but it's going to be from where? You know, does it come out of the FIA's coffers? Does it somehow come? I mean, that would be the only place that I think it would happen, because, you know, the Drivers' Championship awards no prize money. So, and Ferrari won the Constructors that year. So, you know, okay, if you're going to have money, then you're trying to prove lost damages that, you know, with interest and everything. And it's 15 years old. I mean, you know, this is a lot of times why, at least in the U.S. system, we have statute of limitations on stuff like this, because there's only so far back you can go to try to make it right. Even let's say he's able to prove everything that he's accusing people of, what's then the remedy? What's then a correct remedy in order to try to make a just decision here? I just don't see it. I don't see it on the merits, because decisions were made at the time and they handed the gala out, and that was kind of the end of it. I think this is a bit of a, not, you know, the Ecclestone just coming out and talking, that's basically what he's down to doing. And, you know, I think he loves the attention and he wants to stir the pot. And I think he kind of knew that Massa was thinking about doing something and saw an opportunity, and him and Lewis have never gotten along for a variety of reasons that go back a very long time, for a variety of different stuff. I don't want to, you know, rehash all of that. We could do our own episode on Bernie Ecclestone versus Lewis Hamilton, if we really wanted to. But yeah, I don't see this getting to anywhere that's going to, I think you're right. I don't think the championship is in real danger here. It'd be interesting to see what evidence he can come up with. And again, it's a story that will follow, but I think it's going to be another one of these slow burns that probably just ends with some money maybe being changing of hands or some sort of a settlement from somewhere. But I don't see Felipe Massa somehow being knighted 2008 world champion out of this. All right. Enough of the drama. I'm just going to mention this, and Cody, if you want to talk about it, that's fine. We're going to still have the 18-inch tires when we get to the 2026 rules that came out. There was talk of potentially going down to 16-inch rims, but it looks like they're going to stick with the current set of Pirelli tires. And then actually focusing on this weekend. Oh, my Lord, we're actually going to do that. Carlos Sainz is expected to be cleared to race this weekend, which was one hell of a recovery considering the procedure that he had. Oliver Bearman, an amazing debut in Jeddah, will return to his F2 duties, but will be on standby as the Ferrari reserve driver. So if Carlos Sainz proves that he tried to push too hard, we may see the Bear Man back in the Ferrari again, which of course would then completely screw his F2 campaign. So, Cody, what's your thoughts? Do you think Sainz makes it through this weekend? And can Bearman get going in F2? Because just the first race didn't happen for him. The second race, he was on the pole, and then he lost it because he was racing in F1. So he's got himself some work to do. So what do you think is going to happen here?
Well, I think after seeing what Oliver Bearman did, stepping into Saudi Arabia at the last minute and pretty much knocking it out of the park, I don't think his standing at the end of the season for F2, unless he really flubs it, is going to make a big difference. I think he would rather take the other F1 race, to be honest. But I don't know anyone personally, or at least very closely, who's had appendicitis, so I don't know how invasive a surgery of that is. But Carlos Sainz is in, you know, peak physical shape and health. So I think if anyone's going to make a quick recovery, it would be an athlete. It's appendix. It's inside of him. I would think that we saw Lance Stroll race with broken hands and he managed to make that work. So I think he's probably going to actually be in the car. I think Oliver Bearman would probably be very happy to step in and take that role again, and further solidify his position that he probably should be in Formula One in the near future. But I don't think it's going to happen. I think Carlos Sainz is probably going to be just fine. As far as the wheels thing go, since they're supposed to make the cars smaller, I believe that's part of the aim of these new regs, aero regs, as they're trying to make the cars both shorter and narrower. I think having the same giant wheels on the car might look a little goofy. That's just an opinion, though. we'll have to see how it actually plays out, because, you know, from the mock-ups they've done of what might be expected from the new regs, I mean, they look really cool. They look very similar to the current cars that we have, just a little bit more compact, which I think is the right direction to go. Provided you can keep everything equal in safety, it'll definitely help for, maneuverability, making the cars lighter, and all that good stuff. But I think having the giant wheels on there, might be a bit strange, but we'll just have to see.
I imagine it's not going to look any weirder than the first time we saw the F2 cars with the big wheels.
That's true. They do look a little goofy, though.
It was one of those things that it took. Whenever stuff like this comes out, I always think it's going to take three races for your eyes to adjust to it not looking weird, and then you're just going to accept that this is what these cars look like, and now we're going to be fine. It's the same thing like when F2 did the weird rear wing. You know,
I still haven't gotten used to that yet. So we got one more race before I do.
We got one more. We're going to have F2 and F3 this weekend. So, you know, this will probably be your best opportunity to calibrate. But yeah, I mean, it's like when they put the halo on, we all hated how the halo looked. And, you know, now you can't see a car without it. You know, it's just kind of weird how your brain will accept things. Yeah, I mean, it was kind of odd that they just decided to quickly. It was kind of very not a hugely reported story. I mean, the big news agencies had it, but it wasn't like the breaking news of the time. But, you know, it's kind of just interesting that, you know, that they decided to move away from what they had thought was going to be the formula. They obviously, their reason being is they think that that would be a step back in technology somehow. I don't know. As long as it makes, like, to me, as long as these regulations help to make the cars more raceable, help to make the engines a little less complex, help to maybe make them louder, a little more primal, I think then those, all of the above then are good steps. So if this is part of that overall package, I guess I'm fine with it. Again, we'll have to kind of see how it plays out. But I imagine like three races into the new formula, I don't think anybody will care how big the wheels are or aren't. Honestly. But as far as Carlos Sainz goes, yeah, I do expect him to kind of fulfill the whole weekend. If his surgery went nice and clean, he's had a good solid 2 weeks of recovery. As long as, you know, the stresses on the car aren't like pulling, as long as he doesn't like have stitches in or anything like that, which with modern surgery, you tend not to have. I imagine what they probably did was they had the glue, which probably would then fall itself off, you know, when it kind of is done doing its thing. So as long as there's no like tension on that part of his body, I think then he'll probably be fine. You know, and yeah, he's as fit as a fiddle. I mean, the guy looks like he could go in a boxing ring and beat up half the boxers in the world. But, you know, there's no questioning of Carlos Sainz's want to or fitness, but, I guess it means that we're going to have to delay the legend of Oliver Bearman, Ferrari legend Ollie Bearman, for a little while. And I hope his F2 race weekend goes well, you know, racing for Prima along with Kimi Antonelli. And we actually get to see the ding dong that we've been waiting for in F2. And the F2 season has proven to be pretty interesting so far. So here's another new contender coming in there. All right. So we've done enough of the news. We're actually going to switch gears and we'll talk about the actual racetrack itself and the race that we have in store for us. So come on back. We'll take a quick break. We'll re-rack. We'll get into our track facts and then we'll get into what the weather's going to do. And then I need to rally. And my gosh, do I need to rally in the predictions game. I've abandoned my strategy of going for home runs that aren't going to pay off. So come on back. I think you're going to see a lot of us be really close to each other. This one's going to be on the margins this weekend. So come on back and we'll get into all that in just a little bit.
You are listening to the Outlap F1 podcast, and we'll be right back after this quick pit stop. Grab your flu powder, broomstick, or apparate to your favorite audio streaming service to join the discussion on Hogwarts, a podcast, where Dan and his friends have in-depth chapter-by-chapter breakdowns of each Harry Potter novel. Join the group as they dive into the magical world and discuss plot points, analyze character development, and occasionally go off the rails. Whether you're a muggle who's new to the series or a pure-blood wizard who won't need a remember-all, Hogwarts, a podcast, brings everyone to the Great Hall for a magical discussion. Hogwarts, a podcast, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. This is season 6. This is episode number lucky 7 of the Outlap F1 podcast. It's our 2024 Australian GP preview show. You've got Andy and I'm along with Cody tonight, and we look like have a guest in the background. One of Cody's cats has made an appearance, so welcome to one of Cody's cats. So we're going to get into, we're actually going to turn the corner and we'll actually talk about the Grand Prix on tap here. So we're going to get into our track facts brought to us by our good friends at Pirelli Motorsport. Cody, tell us about the Albert Park circuit.
All right. This weekend, we are going and racing at the Albert Park track located in Melbourne. People are going to yell at me if I get this wrong. Melbourne, Australia. Number of laps around the circuit, 58. Track length is 5.278 kilometers or 3.279 miles. And the tire selection for this race, looks like we're going on the softer side. So we've got these C3, C4, and C5 tire compounds going to be used. Your track characteristics from Pirelli are a 2 out of 5 for traction, 2 out of 5 for braking, 3 out of 5 for lateral load, 3 out of 5 for tire stress, 4 out of 5 for track evolution, 3 out of 5 for asphalt grip, 2 out of 5 for asphalt abrasion, and a 3 out of 5 for downforce. The lap records for the Albert Park circuit, for the qualifying time goes to Max Verstappen under the current configuration with a 1 minute 16.732 seconds, while the race lap record under the current configuration goes to his current teammate, Sergio Perez, with a 1 minute 20.235 seconds. Most wins at this track goes to Michael Schumacher, who won here four times, 2000, 2001, 2002, and 2004. Next best is Sebastian Vettel with three wins in 2011, 2017, and 2018. So one with Red Bull, two with Ferrari. Jenson Button has three wins here, 2009, 2010, and 2012. Lewis Hamilton, surprisingly, only has two wins here, 2008 and 2015. And then lastly, Kimi Raikkonen tied with him at two wins, and those were from 2007 and 2013. The constructor wins here is a pretty close match between Ferrari and McLaren. Ferrari has 13 wins here, set over a very long period of time, first one being in 1957, latest one being in 2022, while McLaren has 12, so just one behind, also set over a pretty long period of time, 1970. The first to 2012, the most recent. Then we have Williams with six wins, Mercedes with four wins, and Renault with two wins. What's the circuit like, Andy?
All right, so the Albert Park facility is a temporary facility, and you can always see them doing the build and then the teardown. Albert Park, however, can be quite bumpy, though they did resurface it for 2022, and so that no doubt improved matters. The circuit at the start of the weekend is often quite slippery, rubbering in as the sessions progress. It's also a circuit that requires a well-sorted chassis with several spots on the track where the drivers require a reactive front end to allow them to chuck it into a corner. Melbourne is also one of the faster tracks on the calendar, with Lewis Hamilton's 2019 pole lap set at an average of over 235 kilometers per hour. As for the weather, and you really couldn't ask for better, this is like right down the middle if you're planning your Grand Prix. Qualifying, partly cloudy, a high of near 70 degrees Fahrenheit, winds out of the south, a 10 to 15, a scant 7% chance of rain. And for the race day on Sunday, we're back to Sundays, in Australia at least, will be partly cloudy, a high of 71, winds out of the west-southwest at 5 to 10, only a 6% chance of rain, so doubtful we will see the Pirelli rain tires. All right. So as we are apt to do, we will change gears and we're going to get into... It's our Choose Your Champion predictions game. And boy, I need to turn my head around and put on a rally cap because I got it handed to me last time out. So, all right. Here we go. We will start as we are apt to do with the pole sitter, and the pole sitter in last year's race was Max Verstappen. Is it anybody else's on here? Cody, what's your thought?
Nope. I've got Max Verstappen taking the pole position until further notice. We were talking a little bit before the show about when that could change, and I was asking Andy, when's Ferrari getting their first set of upgrades? Because based on the first couple of races, I think it's Max's pole to lose until some other cars get some upgrades and can potentially take it to them on one lap pace.
Yeah, and the answer to that, the Ferraris are targeting their big upgrade packages in Imola. At least I think with this year's calendar, it's probably going to be the Imola round that's probably going to take the place of the traditional Spanish round of bringing all of the upgrades or the first big upgrade packages forward. Simply because we have back-to-back sprint weekends for rounds 5 and 6, which is the Chinese Grand Prix, which is round 5, and the Miami Grand Prix, which is round 6. So because of that, teams are a little hesitant to try to bring upgrades forward on a weekend where you can't really do a whole lot of testing because you only have the one practice session and you really got to push it. Even with the revised format, if you don't have a good sprint, you know, you're still not, you can change your setup, but you know, it's not exactly an easy thing to try to evaluate parts in like you would with a traditional, you know, three practice weekend. So it looks like Imola is where a lot of teams are scheduling their first big upgrade packages of the season. So I tend to agree with you. And therefore I've also picked Max Verstappen to take the pole. It's his until someone tells me that it's not his. All right. So the interesting part will probably be the lap time. This may be on the margins here, but we're pretty close according to the document. The last year's lap time was the track record on this configuration, 116.732. Cody, you got a new track record in line here?
Yes, I do. I think Max Verstappen is going to set a pole time of 1 minute 15.789 seconds. So almost a full second faster than last year, but I've been kind of surprised by how much faster this year's cars have been. So I'm going big this time.
Yeah. And I think that's a reasonable, that is a reasonable guess. And I'm not that far off of you. I do think we're in that 6 to 8 tenths range. And at least in the last Grand Prix, because of newer surface, better grip, softer tire, I tend to agree that all of those things would lead to a new track record. I have it just a tad slower than you do, though. I've got a 115.987, but I do think we're going to be into the 15s. All right. So turning our attention to the race on Sunday, our 2023 results saw Max Verstappen take the win, Lewis Hamilton come in second, and Fernando Alonso take the bronze medal spot on the podium. So, Cody, who is your race podium?
I think I've pretty much had the same three people on the podium every race so far, with minor variations. I've got, you know, big surprise, Max Verstappen winning the race. For this one, I've got Charles Leclerc coming in second and Sergio Perez coming in third. Mostly just based off of Perez not having the greatest performance here last year. I'm not sure if that, you know, got a little feeling that that might carry over to this year's, but I think he'll still be good enough for the podium.
All right, very good. I have taken my lumps in the last race, so I am just going to go pure chalk and see what that does. So I'm going to go Max Verstappen to take the win. Sergio Perez, the Red Bull 1 and 2. It's been the case this whole year, so why would it stop now? And then Charles Leclerc in the Ferrari. I would love to see Carlos Sainz come back and just, you know, kick ass and get a podium, but I think that is a very tough ask. Even if he's physically fit, it's another thing to actually get in the car and try to make that happen. So I do think Charles Leclerc will have the better of his Ferrari teammate this weekend. So I've got Verstappen, Perez, and Leclerc on the podium in that order. All right, so we will now turn to the fastest lap and the driver. And last year's fastest driver was Sergio Perez, and he scored it with a 1 minute 20.235 seconds. It looked like we're pretty much close together again, but Cody, what you got?
I am going to go with Max Verstappen setting the fastest lap. Man, who knows when any of this is going to change. I think fastest lap is the only one that he stands to maybe not get. But I'm still going to pin him for it for this race, and I have him doing it with a 1 minute 19.841.
All right, very good. I do think, now it's kind of interesting. You're faster on my qualifying. I'm faster on the fastest lap. So I do think it will be Max Verstappen. I do think it'll be in the 19s, but I've got him a tenth or two faster than you. 119.785 is my prediction there. All right, so we'll now turn to the bonus picks, and we've selected P5, P9, and P11. So a good smattering across the grid here. So I'll go first on this one. I think local boy comes home, does good. Oscar Piastri in the McLaren. I think that's kind of where they're at if they can get a top five. I'm pretty much happy right now with where the car is until their big upgrade package comes forward. So I'll go with Piastri to come in with a P5 there. I've got Fernando Alonso in P9. He'll probably qualify really well, but I don't know how the race pace is going to go. And I haven't heard, they've got upgrades in the pipeline, but I haven't heard when they're going to get brought forward. So I think we're going to kind of see a lot of the same thing as we did in Jeddah there. And It seems like unless there's reliability, it's really tough to get somebody not in the top five to score points. And I think Alex Albon is going to be that odd guy out. He does go well here. He will show good here in with Williams. We could also do a whole nother episode about Williams. Have you seen the stories about how, just how far back?
I have. The nuttiness about building the car and Excel and all that stuff.
Oh, yeah, my gosh. James Vowles is probably going to win. He's got to win some sort of like team principal of the decade award if he manages to turn that thing around. Because, oh, my Lord. Wow. But, yeah, Alex Albon taking the very, very concept 2024 Williams car and hopefully making some good out of it is my prediction in P11. So, Cody, what you got for bonus picks?
All right. For fifth place, I've got Carlos Sainz. I think he's going to perform very well, but he is getting back into the car following surgery and recovery, so he might not be at the tippy top of his game. Personally, I'm crossing my fingers that we get to see Oscar Piastri squeeze into that P4 spot. You know, it'd be really good to get an Aussie that close to the front. P9, I've got Fernando Alonso. I'm in agreement with you that he might qualify very well, but as we've seen from the last couple races, Fernando Alonso's qualifying pace is there, but the race pace for the Aston Martin is not quite up to snuff with the Red Bull, Ferrari, or McLaren's, or even really Mercedes. And then I think it's time to start bringing back the Yuki Tsunoda just barely missing out on points joke. I've got Tsunoda coming in 11th.
All right. That's plausible and probably a reasonable prediction there. All right. So for our prop bet this week, because we actually have Team Australia, we have multiple people from Australia racing in Australia. Do either of them score points this weekend? So that could be Oscar Piastri or Daniel Ricciardo. I'm going to go. I've already said I want Piastri to finish fifth. So I will double down on that and say, yes, I think Team Australia will score points on the weekend. Cody, what's your thought on that?
I also think that they will score points this weekend. I think it will definitely be Oscar Piastri doing the point scoring. I would love for both of them to score points. I think that is a really tall ask, though, considering it seems that Daniel Ricciardo is, you know, from what we've seen for the first couple races, maybe having some trouble getting to grips with the car or something. If there was a race, though, where he could, you know, turn around and pull together for a really good finish, this would be the time. Nothing better than doing it in front of your home crowd. So, but I do think on Piastri's strength and McLaren's strength that, yes, Team Australia will score points.
Yeah, and I think also smart move by McLaren in not letting the media in Australia go completely nuts on poor Oscar Piastri. They've kind of said, we're going to protect him from the myriad of events that, you know, they're being asked for him to go do. So I think that's a smart thing. Keep him focused on the racetrack. He's definitely got that nice, you know, no flaw mentality there. So we'll have to see how that works for him this weekend. And so as we set up the weekend, I've been saying we get back to our traditional Sunday. Well, that holds true, except if you're here in the U.S. So it's a little bit different just because of the time change in the United States. So FP1 actually will start on Thursday, like we've been doing. However, it's Thursday night and Friday morning, as opposed to Thursday morning. So FP1 kicks off 9:25 p.m. Eastern. That'll be on ESPN News or, of course, F1 TV. FP2, 12:55 a.m. Eastern on ESPN2 on Friday. FP3 kicks off 9:25 p.m. Eastern. That, again, is on ESPN News. In the United States, there is this thing called March Madness, which is about to kick off. So there is basketball everywhere. So ESPN is slotting us in where they can for qualifying, which will happen Saturday, early morning for us, 12:55 a.m. Eastern. That's on ESPN2. The pre-race show on Saturday/Sunday is going to go on a bit of a journey around the ESPN network. So it starts at 11 p.m. Eastern. That's on ESPN News. It will switch to ESPN2 when either the basketball game that's on there ends or approximately 11:30 p.m. Eastern. However, ESPN News will host the entirety of the pre-race show. As for the race itself, it's going to kick off 11:55 p.m. Eastern on ESPN2. Be prepared to see if a basketball game goes into like 3 or 4 overtimes, be prepared to maybe see a change in where the network, where it might start and then move back there when they can. It's just one of those things that it's the one weekend of the year that I know ESPN gets really, really taxed on where their stuff is. You can also watch it on their streaming platform if you have an ESPN subscription. That's probably the easiest way to find it. So if you have just a cable subscription, you can log on to the ESPN app and you'll get it there. If you have ESPN Plus, you can also find the sessions there as well. Also, F1 TV is a great alternative. Don't even bother with it. It will take, you'll get all the same coverage and all the same voices if you want to. You can either get the F1 TV voices or you can get the traditional ESPN/Sky voices if you are so inclined through F1 TV. All right, so I guess that's pretty much it. But I love the Australian GP. I love the fans. I love the atmosphere. I love the walk that the drivers get to go through. There's a lot of general admission. It really brings the drivers close to the fans. So I am excited as hell for this weekend, even though it's going to be a late night, early morning. But I'm excited for it. This usually is the traditional start of the season. It will be again next year, which I'm very excited about. That is the right move to have the Australian Grand Prix in its traditional spot. I'm a bit of a traditionalist that way. It was always the one that, like, I always have fond memories of this from even my old job days when I would be working late nights. When I would have my iPad and I would bring it, and I wouldn't mind working the late night because I would be watching FP1 or an FP2 session while I was working, even in the thrills of a U.S. tax season. So, always fond memories of the Australian Grand Prix. I'm excited for this weekend. We will be back on Sunday night or Sunday day or Sunday sometime. Haven't exactly figured that part out. Don't know who's exactly going to be on with us. I could see if Deanna's available. She may have March Madness commitments based on her rooting interests. So, you know, we'll have to see kind of where that goes. But we'll be back. We'll recap all of the good, the bad, and maybe the ugly that happens over the course of the weekend. Hopefully all on the track this weekend. We'll be back to cover it all, and we'll recap it for you. We'll try to drop it on our usual times. But, yeah, for Cody, it's been a lot of fun to do this. And as always, folks, may all your laps be fast.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Outlap F1 Podcast. If you like what you heard, click that subscribe button and be sure to leave us a 5-star review. If you want to connect with us outside of the show, check out our website at www.outlapf1.com. Find us on Twitter and Instagram at OutlapF1 Podcast or email us at chatnow@outlapf1.com. As always, thank you so much for your support, and we'll see you on the next one.